I would now like to introduce our guest speaker for the month, James L. from Dover, and he will be speaking on steps, I always miss them, 6, 7, 8, 9. Thank you.
Good evening, everybody. I'm a grateful drunk, and my name is James. I was standing on the sidelines, and I ran into an old friend, Barefoot Bill, and I started to come up and introduce myself as Barehead James. I didn't think that it would, you know, take off as well. But it's really good to see him. I haven't seen him in a while, and I'm excited. And y'all know every time I come down here, it's a neat deal because I see people like that. You know, up to this point, before I open my mouth, like Tom said, because of God's grace, good sponsorship, and people like yourselves, I haven't found it necessary to drink since June 11th of 1994, and for that I'm eternally grateful. And through many people I've learned, and through experience lately, I've come to realize I can't take any credit, you know, and that kind of bothers me sometimes, you know. Up to this point, I believe as best as I could with what information that was exposed to me over the past couple of weeks, I believe that I shared with y'all that I was so powerless over alcohol that I couldn't manage to change my own mind. And I was forced to come to believe in a power greater than myself and then become willing to turn that my will and my life over to that power, to the point where I was willing for the first time in my life to take a truthful look or search for the truth in my life so that I can come to somebody and tell them the exact nature. And last week I tried to tell y'all some of those hidden things that used to go on in my subconsciousness that nobody could put their finger on or touch. And that's why I like towards the end of, well, not really towards the end, but somewhere in the middle of interaction you will read where it talks about how we deceived ourselves by giving misinformation to good men and women. Like I brung up the fact of how we treated the psychoanalysts when they would sit there and they would say, "Oh, James, it was really hard on you how they treated you in the ghetto." And my hidden emotion was, "Yeah, you're right." And to have to expose that to somebody who know that I function like that, I was forced with nothing else but to admit the exact nature, the hidden thing that drove me to do what I was doing. Now I'm at this point now where I've already went through that little experience where they done told me take an hour to myself and reflect back on what I've done up to this point. And I'm kind of, you know, reminiscing on it and getting that funny feeling like they know, you know, and only he knew at the time, but I felt they knew now, you know. And I'm realizing for the first time in my life, I actually had a human moment. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, I used to always be one of those guys that, you know, like love those movies of the cowboys. I was watching one this morning. You know how, like, you know, they had that rough exterior. And one tough guy cowboy was talking to the other tough guy cowboy while he had a gun on him. And he said, "You should be scared." And he goes, "I am." You know, and I'm looking for trembling and fear, but what I was seeing was the same kind of experience I was having with the sponsor when I was talking about the terrible things I was doing. And he was going, "Yeah, man." You know, and I'm thinking, "You know, no, you don't get it." And he goes, "Yeah, I got it." You know, it was kind of like that, you know, and I don't know about y'all, but that gave me a human experience. But when I left him, where fear would have normally kicked in, I felt what it said. I felt like some kind of archway was built. For the first time in my life, I could come in front of people like yourself or with an individual and expose me to the point that it's okay. But now I'm not quite okay with it because I'm now looking at step 6 in the book. And now I got to do something in front of y'all that I've never done before, and that is to emphasize the willingness to change those defective traits and to somehow try to remove the obstacles that have been blocking me from having more of those kind of human experiences. Now, the commentary in step 12 gave me a good idea of what it was I should be trying to work on. Like, if I lust, do I wish to commit rape? God knows I don't want to do nothing like that. You know what I mean? But yet, if I'm lusting in my mind to the point that nobody knows and I'm stalking you, it's just as bad. You know what I mean? So how do I remove the things that drove me to have more than one? I can barely handle the one I got. What am I going to do with four or five more? How do I remove those type of things? Well, I done already exposed it to the sponsor. You know what I mean? But now what am I willing to do? And it told me that willingness was one of the indispensable things in the top three things that I must learn to apply on a day-to-day basis. I can't accept anything until I'm willing to accept it. I find for myself that acceptance is a byproduct of willingness. How many times have you seen an alcoholic come in the room and says, I accept that I'm an alcoholic, but show no willingness to stop drinking? So no wonder people want to tease us, those of us big book enthusiasts or Nazis. I don't think I could be a Nazi. I ain't what Hitler liked anyway. You know, especially what some athletes done to him, you know what I mean? Where I'm trying to go is that they want to try to call 6 and 7 the hidden steps. But if you have honestly did 5, there's no way you can avoid them, no matter how short they look in the book. Because I know I got defective traits. I know that fear shot through every aspect of my life. I knew that my self-centeredness had me stepping on the toes of people, and they constantly kept hurting me without provocation. I'll go back to the first illustration of what I had to be entirely ready to remove. I told you, as a young man, vital, kept hearing those older men in my past telling me how I had to sow my oats. So I felt I didn't do anything wrong if you didn't act right. So therefore, maybe she will. And then I wondered why all of y'all girls got together and said, he ain't nothing but a dog. And now I'm coming in the room feeling shame, fear. I wonder what they're saying about me. What do they think of me? You know, I'm walking around like that. So can you understand why I became defective? Because imagine if I went to a job interview and one of you ladies were there. Do I turn around at the door and leave? Probably. Because I'm going to think as soon as you go in that man's office, you're going to tell him just what I'm like. So I live most of my life in those defective traits. Like it says, do I want to be, you know, such a braggart, you know, to the point to where y'all look at me sideways out the side of your neck, you know, there you go again, showing off, you know. I don't want to be seen that way, but I am going to still be human. Some people think I'm cocky in AA. Ain't nothing cocky about me in AA. I don't drink. I once heard an old time in a meeting said, this program is so simple, he almost missed it. And as soon as one of us get it, we're considered somewhat defective compared to the don't drink and go to meetings. And so, you know, I mean, am I defective because I say that AA works? Or it appears to you that I'm being cocky? I'm not being cocky. I'm doing exactly what happened to the man in the doctor's opinion. They said there he was what? Brimming with confidence. He was confident that this thing could work. And so some of us are just like that. I've always been loudmouthed. I ain't nothing personal. So, but that's one of the glaring defects that everybody in this room who've ever had any personal contact with me know, that I'm excited about AA, I'm loud about it, sometimes obnoxious, and I will hold you hostage even if you're a volunteer or not. I'm not going to walk around feeling that I'm defective because I want to talk about AA as much as I talk about Donna. And without AA, I might not have no Donna. So am I going to, you know, like put AA to the side and say, well, you know, let me take it down a little low key for you. Why? Because I've done that most of my life. Now, you tell me if this defective or not. Me lessening me just to make you bigger. That's defective. So now let me share why I come to realize that that theory works for me. My 4-step was done in the 4-column like most. But most of my 6 and 7 work came out of my 3rd column. I'll give you an illustration. I had a resentment with my ex-wife. Here was one of the causes. She always had me spending my money. I was pissed. cause. I mean, like, we had bills to pay, but it always seemed like I was digging the deepest. Like, she would dig in her pocket, I was kind of down by my kneecap, you know? And I felt that way. I felt that kind of strain and stress on me. Now, we were sharing the situation in the modern society. Most of the time, it's, you know, it's a two-income household. You know, we're raising children, trying to make ends meet, and I'm trying to meet my responsibilities the best I can with what I had. But I'm overexceeding myself, and I'm becoming resentful. So when I got to my third column, I understood that my self-esteem was affected because I knew there was days I wanted to tell her, look, you know, I need some work boots. But she needed that money for what she wanted, so I would put off the work boots, and now I will see you with a brand new pair of Red Wings, and I'm pissed. So now, here I was in this third column, recognizing that my self-esteem was affected. I recognized that I was full of fear, that if I say no, she may leave. And all of these different kind of things, just like Bill describes to us in his third column. I felt personal or sexual relations coming up in me, you know, on the negative side. Like, my personal relations with other men was, it was hard for me to work two jobs and a half and then go up to somebody and say, hey, man, it's Sunday. And I go, hey, man, could I borrow 40? Got to get some gas, get to work all week. Ain't you working two jobs? Yeah, you know, but I'm just a little short. You know, or extend my credit card further than it can go because I gave her all my cash so that I wouldn't have to deal with anything when I came in the door. Are y'all with me? Now, I'm not going to stand here and tell you some surface stuff so that you can feel warm and fuzzy like I told you last week. I didn't come here for that. I came to tell you the truth. The truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off. And that's the truth. My grandmother used to say, God don't like ugly and he ain't too crazy about us pretty ones either. And I'm going to tell you the truth. And now, the reason I'm spending a little time in six is so that I can let you know why the importance of seven was for me to not hold back nothing. Now, how could I possibly tell y'all I applied the seventh step by hitting my knees and holding back nothing from God when I can't expose it to you? If I don't feel the love of God in my life enough that after I expose it to him that I can't expose it to you who can't make it any different if I live or die tomorrow. Y'all with me so far? Okay, I have your permission to go on. So what happened was is now six and seven works in those affected areas. So what I had to do was become entirely ready to tell her, I don't agree with the plan that you come up with, and this is what I can do. This is what I can do up to the point to where two-thirds, seven-eighths of what I have, you can take and do whatever you want with it. But from here back, I need this to sustain what it is I'm trying to do. And I can no longer let my fear keep me from doing that. 5 years later, we were divorced. Sometimes AA ain't going to always make things easy. Because what happened was, just like it told me in the family afterwards, my family started feeling like they had a mortgage on me. Like I had a debt that was totally unpayable. I was good enough and blessed enough to good enough to work at what I was trying to change so that my children somehow stayed in fellowship with me. But she couldn't no longer do it because it wasn't working for her like she wanted it to work. She wouldn't go to Al-Anon. So there I am, still trying to deal with my so-called defects of character. And I always would like to use these lighthearted defects. Like, for example, everybody who know me, whoever have any time to talk to me, knew I grew up in an urban environment. I'll give you the short version. That is the hood. Okay? And for a long time in the hood, I would not leave the hood because I felt that it would take all this kind of money in order for me to get out of the hood. Because people say, oh, you got to be able to buy a house, you got to be able to do this. If you ain't got that, then what's the use of you leaving? And so I'm walking around thinking that the environment by which I had settled for was okay when I felt totally uncomfortable. So at some point, what AA did for me in 6 and 7, it taught me that I had some value because God showed me value. Now, y'all think I'm lying. I'm going to share something with you. And if you can relate to this, you probably like I am. Remember when you would take a drink of booze and it would hit your belly and the next expression that came out of you was, you know, I bet you any amount of money, if you think I'm lying, try me. Go home tonight, hit your knees about something that's bothering you, and hold back nothing. I bet you any amount of money when you stand up, the next expression that come out of you is, whew. Y'all need a minute for that one, don't you? Because that happens to me when I find myself in conflict with my fiance or conflict with my children or conflict at work or conflict with another brother or sister. When I'm in that turmoil and I know I can't do nothing to change it. So I see that my shortcomings have failed me in the past. And what was my shortcomings? I know what I'll do. I already fell short. As soon as I say I know what I'll do, I already fell short. Because I had already learned back in page 68 or so that I needed to have my dependence upon something that was infinite and not something that was finite. And there I am confessing the fact that I had turned my will and my life over to the care of God, but I'm not willing to apply, or like it said in the beginning of step six in the big book, I wasn't emphasizing the willingness to say, God, you do it. Now, I'm not sitting here and going to tell you any floaty stuff, you know, and tell you, just let it go. I have my fiance here tonight, and I'm grateful that I have someone here who knows me. And I'm going to tell y'all the God and honest truth. My higher power said if a man testifies for himself, by himself, his testimony is not valid. Honey, do I live the AA program best of my ability? And why did I do that? I didn't do that to show off or to brag to you. But what I'm trying to tell you is you know who else can do that for me? My sponsor. You know who else can do that for me? The people who I work side to side with, or a good brother like Mike or Barefoot or anybody who's active members who say, James, you want to participate with us? And they let me practice my inevitable right to participate as an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I needed to just do that for a moment for me, to let you know that I'm standing here trying to tell you the God and honest truth. I'm not here to, you know, to lie to you like I told you last week. I'm not going to lie tonight. I'm not going to play games or lollygag. And now the reason that I did that is now you understand why I had to become absolutely willing to make a list. Why I was forced into a position to go back at that fourth step. And a lot of people sometimes misinterpret certain things. And Bill said you already have the list. Now I want to ask you a question. How many people you think were affected around the people you harmed? Hello. So, I got a list already. It's right here in front of me. I can see, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. You know, and I'm looking at it. But then I go, and here's the deal. My ex-wife, whom I had a resentment with, that I owed no particular amends in all the areas by which I had problems in it. Some places I didn't do anything to her, but I couldn't see it. My sponsor revealed to me when I saw a real resentment and when I exaggerated one. Because I'll tell you the truth, if you look at step five in the commentary, when I say commentary, I mean 12 and 12, the cliff notes of the steps. Okay, no disrespect to the 12 and 12 in any harm. But Bill tells you in the big book that the 12 and 12 is an interpretive commentary. It was never meant for me to use for application. It gives me some ideas of what I read in the big book and how to better practice what I just read. So that's why I used it. And what Bill pointed out to me on page 58 after he told me a definition of humility was when one can recognize what they could be and who, no, when one recognized who they are and what they could be was the better expression of humility that I can show you. That's the definition he gave me. That's why I used to cringe in meetings when people go, I feel sometimes that I have experienced humility, but I don't know what it is. Do you know I feel a sense of humility by exposing myself to you? It's hard to do what we do in AA, those of us who have the capacity to be honest. It's hard to come up here and expose your inner self to somebody, especially a room full of people. So now I'm looking at step 8, and this is another thing made me cringe when it comes to step 8. You ever notice you're in the step 8 meeting and the 12 and 12 meeting, and somehow step 9 get caught up in the conversation? Or somebody get wise and say, well, if you have a problem with the one you're doing, then go back to the one you just did. Been there, done that. I want to know about what you do here. So Bill gave me some insights more. In the big book, he gave me a lot of different things to look at. He told me how to make personal, like, relational ideas of amends, how to prepare for it, why it's necessary to put you on the list. For example, he gave me one where a man did a friend dirty. You know what I mean? A friend, somebody you call a friend, somebody you working with side by side. And he taught me how to approach that in a proper way and an improper way. So now I took that idea and put it into personal relationships, like with someone who I'm, you know, sharing life with, or a good friend, or a working buddy, you know, because it was real personal. These are people who I was regularly seeing on a regular basis, and I knew I could be frank, but I had to be careful and not lead with the spiritual chin. Just try to be a better person. Though I had some of the same characteristics that they always saw all my life, but I wasn't like going in your wallet when you got out the truck. You didn't know that, but I did. And I started sitting next to you with a little more confidence than normal, and I wanted to leave and press the spiritual feature quickly to you and say, you know, I found God, and I don't take out of your wallet anymore. Bop! What'd you do that for? You know, imagine exposing something to somebody that they never knew about, and now you think that it makes you more stand up and more righteous that you exposed it and got your tooth knocked out. Now you can come to the room and go,
I've not made an amends.
That's fine if you want to do that. Whatever floats your boat. But I found for me that those secret things, when I got still and let God be God and watched you change because I kept my mouth shut and just made different behaviors in myself that caused you to behave differently. And Bill told me at some point then, now that the confidence level between me and you have gotten better, now I can expose myself without having to feel bad that you told me about myself. Because Bill told you that now, he says in the 8th step of the 12 and 12, he says that most of my garbage was hidden underneath the consciousness. So when I read that in the commentary and went back to the big book itself, now I understood what he meant when that knucklehead wanted to go running up to the judge. You see? Because after being the way I was for so long, I couldn't wait to run up to the judge and go,
yes, I owe tons of child support. Do with me you may.
And the old times in AA always told us, get your butt off the cross, it's already been done. Y'all heard that one? I had an old timer tell me that. He said, get off the cross, it's already been done. And I went, ooh, purple lip old wrong. You know, it took time. It takes time for me to mature or to a point to where I'm ready to be direct. And that's, I believe, what step 8 is all about. Preparation. Bill gives you everything you need to know. He tells you what to do in a personal relationship, like being in a partnership with a woman or a man. Why would I go and expose something to her if I was alcoholic by God's grace? I met Donna in sobriety. And I don't have any conduct today. I don't think there's any ladies in here that can go to Donna and tell Donna I did anything with them that I wasn't supposed to do. That's pretty good. That's two for two. I'm patting 1,000. And what I'm trying to say to you is that why would I have bad behavior with one of the ladies in the house and now feel like it's time for me to be righteous and not even think about what it's going to do to her emotionally and go and expose to her my ill-gotten behavior? And then have her say, I thought so. And right after I take the verbal pommeling, what's the next question I'm asked? Who is she? Even though that third party had done no more than fall into a trap that my motive was about. I don't mean no disrespect to nobody. Again, I'm just trying to be honest. I can't get comfort at her expense. The book tells me that my purpose is to become of maximum benefit to her. So she can't make me be of maximum benefit to her. I have to become willing enough not to create no harm to her anymore, so that I start to emphasize that change in me, so that she never have to worry about one of y'all ladies calling the house saying, "James there." Now, it might be funny. It's funny now. But if you ever been in that situation, it ain't funny. It may give you a nice story to tell to your buddy 6 months from now. But when it's going on, I'm telling you, the emotions that come out of that. And guess what happens? Just like it says in the 12 and 12, I become cold to her. Whatever. Callous. Tight-fisted. Because my fear is kicking in and I'm thinking, okay, she might leave me, so let me hold on to all my money. She's suffering. But I feel better than coming to your meeting, raise my hand, and talk so spiritual I'm about to levitate around the room. In the hood, they had an old saying, don't write no checks with your mouth, your behind can't cash. These are principles that you didn't see on the walls, on how they say it in the meetings. You know, the slogans. I've been hearing slogans from the time I can remember. My grandmother had tons of slogans. One time my grandmother told me, my mother said, go in there and tell my mother she got it. I said, Grandma, she stopped right there. You tell my daughter, the only thing I got to do is stay black, pay taxes, and die. What a heck of a slogan, ain't it? So I run the mama who grew up under grandma. She had a slogan, too. Tell my mother she need to mind her business. Grandma retaliated with one of her slogans. My mind is my business. Now, I ain't saying the slogans isn't a bad thing. I'm just saying I never read nowhere in How It Works where it said, here are the slogans we work, which is suggested as a program of the class. Never read it. But they're powerful stuff. And they may come in handy. But if you're as unmanageable as I am, and like I told y'all a while back in my powerless sharing, when I was driving down that highway, bone dry sober, 3.5 years from total abstinence, there wasn't a slogan I could come up with that could turn that car around. See, I like God. Matter of fact, I like him as a friend, and I love him because he's mainly all I got in order to be what I need to be to her, who is important and living in my household with me and my children and her children, and we trying to raise a family, as well as is to y'all. Now, I'm not going to compare love to anybody, because see, my other spiritual book says love don't seek itself. It don't puff itself up. It don't make itself bigger than what it is. Love is gentle. Love is kind. Love is patient. Love is long-suffering. I was reading, I believe it was the long version of the Serenity Prayer, and he wrote in there, he says, through suffering puts us on the pathway to peace. No wonder drunks love to sit in the meeting and say, for the first time in my life, I found some peace. Because the only way you're going to find that peace is you got to be ready to be direct. I don't know about y'all, but when I made certain amends, when I walked off from that amends, I felt a peace that surpassed all my understanding. How many times, if you were anything like I was, where you like to steal stuff, and you're walking past the store, you're walking down, say, one of them shopping stores. See, I had a better life through chemistry as well as alcoholism. So we had a little thing we used to call run and snatch. You know, we used to call them booster cables. You know, like, you say, yo, man, you going shopping? We ain't had no money, but we used to say that to each other because we needed to get some money. So we say, you going shopping? You want to get paid? So what we used to do is run in the stores, grab an armful of stuff, and run. Now, some got caught and some didn't. I happened to be some of the ones that, you know, didn't get caught on time. And after I got sober, I would be walking down that strip, and I would walk confidently past one store, walk past the hot dog wagon with confidence, and then I would see that store and go, like that. You know what I mean? Hoping that nobody in that store would spot me. And no wonder I'm walking around feeling like, you know, I like to tease and say I was so tight that I could suck a brick out of the wall. I mean, you know, I was just tense. Like, every time I would come into those circumstances where I was about to be exposed for what I did, because I'm walking around here not making it right. Now, I don't mean no disrespect. I hear people taking great lengths for correction of amends. I got some wrongs in my life that I can never fully make right. Now, if y'all can help me later on after the meeting, tell me how to do this. Tell me how you go to a house where you was riding in a car with three other men. You had a problem with their son. Maybe he dissed you. You know, stepped on your sneakers, something. Say hello to your girl, and you and your crew gotta let them know what's up. So you go home and you get your gap. You know what I'm saying? You rolling the what? Yeah, I'm down. You get in the car. You roll down that block real slow. And you go, chick-a-chick. And your friend in the back kind of delayed about doing it. And the window go down. And your friends go, pop, pop, pop. And you holding yours. And because they went pop, 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 guess what they want you to do? And if you don't go pop, 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 they turn around in the back seat and go pop, pop, pop. So you go pop, pop, pop. You don't know what happened. So you mean to tell me, in order for me to be a part of what y'all got going on, I got to go to that woman's house and go, how you doing, Miss Johnson? And stick that chin out there like this here. And Miss Johnson ain't trying to hear how sorry I am or how apologetic I am. Because, see, I paid partial price already. Because I had a lifestyle that was inconducive to a community of any kind. And the legal system put me in jail for quite a while for that kind of behavior. But now I wanted, like a sick person, to return back to that behavior. But because of y'all, I have made some of that amends directly, because now I'm a taxpaying, hardworking citizen and I don't own a gun. Yes, I do. I wanted to lie, but the truth is I do have one. It ain't legal either. If you can find it, call a cop. I'm not saying that I'm Charlton Heston, you got to pull it from my dead cold hand. You can find it, you keep it. But the truth of the matter is, that's something that I got to get better with. Now, I ain't sitting here lying. That's why Mama laughing. Because Mama knew I was about ready to lie. And I told y'all I ain't come here to do that. The truth of the matter is, I don't have it in my home anymore. You see? Because I can't have it there. Now, I know some people might not feel that might not have been a wise choice of saying. But guess what? If you ain't got no right to cross my gate, you ain't got no right to search my house. I don't commit crimes. I try not to. And that's why I got rid of that gun. You see? So where did that come from? That came from the fear of me going, let's go, fellas. I knew that wasn't right, so I had to get it out of my house. You see what I'm saying? Because I knew that the only way I can make that right is I can't go back to living that way no more. See? Because I believe three things. I believe what people have said a long time ago. You find tough guys in two places. In jail and in the graveyard. But guess what? You sit around here long enough, you'll find a few of us were. And it was because of God's grace. And I'm going to tell you nothing more than that. That I chose not to live the way I used to live anymore. There was a time in my life I didn't care nothing about you. And right now, there's some people in this room that have seen me experience people walking up to me in AA meetings, and some of y'all even talked nasty to me back when I used to try to tell you about this big book. And would poke me in my chest like this, you don't know nothing. And in my old ways, that would have been enough for me to say, yo, fellas, we got to have some business. Just because you did this. This is not no joke. And it's not just about my drinking. I was a very sick man for a very, very long time. Drunk and sober. There was a time I was more dangerous in my sobriety than I was in my drinking days. I would walk in these meetings knowing that I had unfinished business. And brothers like Gene and brothers like a few other men and women in these rooms who would sit there and say, James, you don't have the right to go in there and punch that man in his face. And I said, you don't understand what he did to me. This is no joke. I had a man in AA one time shake my hand and says, I said, I'm having some problems with somebody who's treating me in a very bad manner, and I wish you would talk to your pigeon. He shook my hand and said, maybe it's a cultural indifference. Right here. Now you ask yourself, how do I make that right? I forgave him. But it took a long time. It took Gene saying, bro, it ain't worth it. I couldn't just let it go. And you know why I couldn't just let it go? Because like I told you, I had a list. And when I went back in my fourth, I had some principles and institutions in my past that meant me harm. And there's this man representing a picture of people who told me that I didn't even have the right to drink the same fountain they was drinking from. I told y'all when I first started sharing that I was born February 16th, 1963 in Dillon, South Carolina. The last state to integrate schools. Now, I'm coming up north here, and I got people who thinking it's cool to have some prejudice. I was dating, and as y'all can see, I'm black. And my fiance is of European descendancy. And I had guys walking around telling people, what are you doing running around with that in anyway? Like I'm less than. Y'all wondering why I'm talking about this. That's what made me reluctant to be direct. Can't y'all see what y'all did to me? Well, I need to make it right with them. The world owes me. You done went through what I went through. Why bother? I ain't like I'm drinking or nothing. You know, they should be glad for that. But I did make some amends. I told y'all in back in when I was sharing with my fifth how I owed tens of thousands of back child support. How much I owe them now, Mom? That's hard. I remember Gene. May I, bro? Gene remember times it was so hard for me. Gene said, listen, bro, I got some work for you at my place. Other brothers around AA who had worked hard and have gained have put food on my table for me and my family. And y'all wonder why I talk the way I talk. And I was sober. And just like they said in the seventh chapter of this book, they seen that I was doing everything in my power to stay sober a day at a time. And they supported me and they helped me to be a better man. And today, I could do the same thing for somebody else. I had some people come over to my house the other day, help me at my house. And I gave my honest day's pay for honest day's work. And I wouldn't have known how to do that if good men and women in the rooms had not done that for me at a time when I needed them to do it, rather than saying, just let it go. So I knew I owed something. So the book was right when it says there's some wrongs I can never fully make right, so I might have to do it through a letter. And sometimes, in my case, postponement was necessary. I had to postpone knocking on that lady door saying I participated in a very violent act that may have, I don't know what it did. Still to this day, I don't. But I've known of that kind of stuff and what can happen and the terror that it put in people because it happened to me. Sitting in the living room and all of a sudden, oh! So I know what it puts in you. But I don't know how I'm ever going to do that right. So now I don't get in people's cars before guys with guns and talking about, let's go get even. And how do I know not to do that? Because the book told me to be what? Sensible, tactful, and considerate. Never servile or scrappy. Because as God's child, I can stand on my feet and crawl before no one. And you sit in these AA meetings sometimes, let's talk about the promises. God just gave you a promise. You insulted me and you still breathing. That might sound funny to you, but I'm selfish and self-centered. And I might have said that in a comical manner, but there was times in my mind I was thinking that way. You wait till this meeting over. I see you in the parking lot. See how spiritual you is when you're getting up off the ground, pal. See if you want to turn it over then. You know? And I used to be that kind of sarcastic. I used to have that kind of cynical, sick thinking. And no wonder, like it said in We the Agnostic, that I was faced with that proposition. I wasn't just faced with a proposition when it came to God. I was faced with a proposition when it came to you. And the book said, if I'm painstaking about this phase of a development. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. Remember back in step two when you was faced with that proposition? Remember page 52 when you was full of fear and couldn't make a living? When you was prey to misery and depression and all that stuff? And you sitting there with logic, not giving yourself the reasonable approach or interpretation and all that kind of stuff? Because this was the fine attribute of all mankind and all that? And you sitting there trying to come up with these devices and schemes to try to make your life a little more easier to live. And then you can't make it easier to live, so you faced with a proposition. Well, God will do that to you with people. God will make you eat your words. I ain't never going to say I'm sorry to him. I don't care what you say. And then one day you will find yourself needing forgiveness. And you will know that you can't experience it unless you're willing to give it away. My higher power said, before you bring your gift to the altar, pick up your gift. Go make it right with your brother. Then come and bring your gift back to the altar. I had to do that because I was sitting in meetings for a long time. I told y'all for 14 years I suffered like very few drunks do. We know that in AA. How many people you know that sometimes when they start talking about their experience, you go, that's drinking? I'm serious. I'm not gonna, you know, try to accuse anybody for not being an alcoholic. Like they say, you're an alcoholic when you say you are. But I am a real puke. I didn't care nothing about you. And now I'm running around here trying to get free. That's why the old timers in their very loving way tried to let us know without always being as particular as some of us big book enthusiasts is. We kind of more thorough about the work. But the old timers sometimes in their paraphrasing manners try to give us information the shortcut way without us going through application. And they would say something like this. If you want to feel good, do good things. I did good things to get better from you, not just to receive good. If I gave you a dollar, it cost you five. I gave you love, that means you need to worship me. And I ran around thinking like that and acting like that for a long time. If something tragic happened to me, you must feel sorry for me, to the point to where you're in tears and don't know what to do with yourself because James is in need. And I'm running around that self-consumed. So now when you got this list in front of you and you know that you had harmed the person, now if I harm him, he may have somebody that loves him. Am I willing to add that person to my list? Because they made it obvious. How many people of the opposite sex that you have relationships with and you broke up with their son or daughter, you think their mama was pissed off? You think their uncles was kind of ticked off? You think their best friend don't particularly care for you? Do you think? How thorough do you really want to be? How free do you really want to be? So if I've offended you to the point to where your friend felt that even though I made it right with you, he's still running around here telling me if he ever do that to me, I'm going to kill him. And I'm wondering, he's seemingly hurting me without provocation. What did I do to him to provoke him to behave that way with me? Because I hurt someone he loved. You hurt somebody I love, directly or indirectly, I'm in pain. For them as well as for myself. And I had to recognize that in step 8. Now I'm not going to sit here and tell you I wrote a list of 50,000,070 in my 8-step list. I'm not going to tell you. So they would bring it up. They would bring it up in ways like this. You're sitting at a table eating. Or you out in an enjoyable place somewhere. You know, just living life. Walking, skipping through the tulips. And all of a sudden, Roger from 10 years ago sees you, and you go, hey, Roger, and he go. And you like, you know, what I do to you? And I'm unwilling to say to Roger, "Dear problem?" Because I kind of know that I had did his sister wrong because I messed with his cousin. You know what I'm saying? But I don't want to bring that up because, see, now I can afford to be frank with him because there's no third party involved in that. It's not like he's going to run back to his sister and say, "Oh, you know what? James came to me and apologized for the way he treated you." Because if I already did it with you, and he go running to you and said, "Do you know James had the nerve to come up to me and ask me what it was that I did to him? And I told him I ain't like the way he treated you. Did you know he did that to me?" And that person who I was direct with would say, "Yeah, he came to me and did the same thing." Now, it's up to them now if they want to accept the apology or amends, if you care to say, and try to make it right with each other. Or they could choose to live the way they want to live after that. Because I did all that I'm willing to do. I'm not going to run around and chase you till you look at me and say, "You know what? I'll hang out with James any day." But I'll be darned. I'll be darned if I'm going to kiss so much butt that every time I sneeze, I go, "You know, I need tissue." You know what I mean? I'm just not going to do it. Because that's not what I believe God intended my life to be. It's for me to lay on the floor just because I did wrong in my life and have people just step on me. Bill would never have put that there if it wasn't meant for it to be there, where he said, "As God's child, you stand on your feet." And for the first time in my life, I started, and I'll touch on this the next time around, but I started to have a sense of feeling of kind of what character should be like. That I should be able to stand up and take my lumps. You know what I mean? But not be annihilated because you felt it was necessary. Because I gave you more power than I gave God. And that wasn't the intention of the work that I did. I just wanted to get along with people. I always just wanted to be a part of. I don't know about nobody else in this room, but I had, like I shared with y'all before, I had a problem in the social instinct more than any other area of my three God-given instincts. When it came to the sexual inventory of my life, I understood that I was out of control. I did, but I never wanted to confess it until an old timer caught me in an emotional relationship one day and said, "Boy, if you survive this one, you'll probably stay sober the rest of your life." And I wanted to hurt him because he called me out, straight out, because I was sitting in the meeting, you know, freshly divorced, just cutting the fool, bone dry sober. I was like a kid. You seen that new commercial for Great Adventures? With a guy dressed like an old man, he dancing. You know, that's how I felt, man. When soon as my old lady and I got divorced, I was like, boom! And, you know, and I thought I wasn't doing nothing wrong. And the reason that I'm touching on some of the present and some of the past stuff is just like it said in the information that was given me here. How many ways did I apply these principles to my life, both present, both past, present, and how I look to do them in the future? I do look to continue to keep on recycling this process so that I can grow both what? Emotionally and spiritually. But anybody sitting in this room know that you can't do nothing without confession. Especially when it comes to spiritual change. If you can't go before a man and God and say, "I need help and show me how," or sit back quietly and see the examples that are set for you and have enough of character to apply them, then you'll stay where you at. No wonder they always say, like I'm going to touch on next week, maintenance. You cannot be progressive and maintain at the same time. That's an oxymoron. How do I maintain growth? To be or not to be? I don't think that that's what he meant, for me to just to maintain something. Then the first ones to tell you it's the progress, not perfection. See, you can maintain that so-called self-perfection in your mind that, you know, all is well. All is well. I can maintain that, but I can't maintain progress where somebody said, "James, you know, you're pretty fired up, bruh. Calm it down a little bit." Me? I ain't do nothing wrong. There is some times when my enthusiasm gets a little ahead of me. Do I like to be told that? So then I gotta kind of bite that bullet a little bit and go, yeah. And then I quiet down for a little while. And then somebody come along and go, "James, you okay?" Then I'm sitting in the car like, So, you know, why would I determine what I should be based on what you tell me I should be? If you have a personal relationship with God, because you're going to need it to get through some of this stuff that I'm talking about. Because if you ain't ready to look at it, then just like it says, it kept coming up over and over and over. Willing, willing, willing. Just keeps popping up. Willing. See, in the beginning, they told you to be open-minded, honest, you know, set you up real good. You know, while I'm talking to you, be open-minded. Now, when you talk to me, be honest. Now become willing. This ain't complicated. That's why he said it was indispensable. See, if I don't know, and like I once heard a wise speaker say, I didn't know none of this stuff I'm talking to you about prior to June 11th of 1994. Not a bit. That's why I can't take no credit. Because I'm sitting here quoting some Bills, some Gene, some Mike, some Nelson, some this one, some that one. But they told me if I use it 3 times, I can claim it. You know, it's nothing greater experience than I ever seen than when we take something that people thought was a waste and find value in it. I don't know about y'all, but I was considered not worthy of people's care, of people's love, even though I did the damage to lose it. I wasn't deserving of it. Some of y'all may even be thinking the same way I'm thinking. I didn't deserve some of the good things that I have in my life today. And when I heard old-timers say that standing at podiums, they said, everything I got, I'm totally undeserving of. I used to go, were you nuts? But I can honestly stand here today and tell you there was nothing in my life that I have today that I can honestly tell you that I deserve. But I can tell you this, everything that I have in my life today, I am grateful to have it. Very grateful to have it. Because if I got what was coming to me, and see, we always talk about keeping it green. You ain't got to wait for somebody to fall in this room for you to keep it green. You ain't got to wait till you drive down the street and see a ballroom. You ain't got to wait to keep it green to get to detox. You want to keep it green? Take a minute right now to think about if you got what you deserved. Then tell somebody about gratitude. Because, you know, your expression then would be like, ooh, okay. And that's kind of how it was when I received good things in my life. Oh, ooh, okay. When is it going to leave? That's defective. To say that I'm looking for that other shoe to drop. See, that's why I love what Bill and them did for me. Bill exposed so much to me in this book and the first 100 people. They exposed so much to me. They told me that I was prey to misery and depression. They told me that I was content prior to investigation. You told me when I got in here, things would get better, but first they're going to hurt like hell. Sure enough, y'all was right. It was painstaking along the way. But because of these steps, I can tell you, just like Mama said, I was painstaking about that child support. I got it paid with help of other people and direction, you know, and a lot of hard work. But I'm going to be honest with you, I can't take all the credit for that either. Because when I earned the right to be given the opportunity to make more money, God gave that to me. Just like God may at some point put me through a time where I got to find peace through suffering. Where I might get sick, can't work like I'm working right now. Maybe my boss, who the best job I ever had in my life, best job I ever had outside of selling drugs. Might be funny, it's the truth. I remember driving a straight job for $10 and $12 an hour for 12 and 14 hour days and watched the man at the end of the week cheat me out of my overtime. And I wanted to attack his cultural background and say, a little, you know what, cheated me. But I knew he was going to do it because he was showing it in his character. It had nothing to do with his cultural background. He was selfish and self-centered, just like I was. And he wanted what he wanted, and he wanted it for the price he was willing to pay it. But I didn't want to see it that way, so I put a little twist on it. But I kept driving the truck week after week after week, not afraid to go in the office and confront him and say, you got me driving the truck this big, and you got a guy driving the truck that big, and I'm doing twice the work he's doing. Why I ain't making twice the money? Fear. Afraid to lose what I got. Still am. I don't want to lose my home. I don't want to lose Donna. I don't want to lose the children in my life that are trying to, I'm trying to regain relationships with and help them to not make some of the mistakes I made. But if I don't continue to be vigilant about the work that I'm doing in 6, 7, 8, and 9, I'm going to continue to find myself repeating old behaviors that cost me the price that it cost me before. Drunk or sober. If you don't think you can make some drastic choices sober, keep coming. That's why the old timers do that, man. Well, you know, like, especially like me, I'm coming around to, you know, becoming part of the X clan now. I'm going to get my first little X in June. You know, we start getting a little, you know.
I know how to do it.
And old timers will spot that from way down the street, and they'll walk up to you, pat you on your back. Keep coming. Because they know. Their experience have shown them that you will find yourself being human again, and will you be just as willing to make right your wrongs sober as you was for the wrongs you made when you were drunk? And if you're not, then don't meet me in the parking lot, because we're going to get it on. Because there's people in this room that held me accountable even in my sober condition. And I didn't like that. That hurt. When you think that you're doing right, you know, you're working these steps and you're plugging away. And the only reason they do it out of love, because they don't want you to settle. They want you to progress. They're not trying to hurt you. I didn't know that for years. I thought y'all was picking on me because I'm black. Then I would catch bro outside. You know what I'm saying, bro? And he'll say, nah, I don't know what you're saying. You know, and I'd be like, oh, it's like that now, right? Yeah. The truth. It's the God and honest truth. But I'm grateful that some brothers are on a spiritual plane where they need to be, and they could call me on that kind of stuff and not allow me to use excuses to make you do what I need you to do so I can feel better and you can feel worse. Because I'm not, like I said to you, I'm not going to let myself continue to feel bad behind people wanting to feel better. I used to do that too, and the nice stuff helped me to do that, because Bill points that stuff out. He points that stuff out to us clearly. That's in the next week, I'll be talking about something that a lot of people will talk about all the time. And I'm going to bring it up tonight, and then I'll shut my mouth. But I love to hear people sit around the room talk about the axiom. The axiom. Something must be wrong with you. I'm going to tell y'all some truth. There is some times in my life where my burden gets so heavy and my cross become hard to bear. You ain't did nothing to me. I woke up that morning. Mama said, good morning. I said, good morning. She said, good morning, honey. I said, good morning. She said, honey, you hungry? I said, good morning. Kids say, daddy. I said, what? Ain't nobody did nothing to me. And I'm back in self. And I get in the car and I start it up. And mama know when I'm in self, because you hear the wheels go. Then I pull up to that red light. Dummy. Light's green. And then, good to the meeting.
Hello, everyone. My name is James, and I'm an alcoholic.
And I become real spiritual. Then I get home, and Donna say, honey, how was the meeting? Unfinished business. And that's where I used to carry over. That's why the ninth step became very important to me, because after I had let this stuff go for so long and waited so long to get the work done, that the pain of getting it done hurt so much that every now and then I fall into self and let unfinished business in my presence get undone. Did I lose y'all? Did you get where I'm going? And what I'm trying to say is that AA is a beautiful thing, but I must stay vigilant. That's why Bill says in the ninth step of the 12 and 12, stop talking prudence when you constantly practice evasion. Don't slap me like that. I didn't mean it. And he told me why I was doing that kind of stuff, you know, because it was out of the fact that I wanted to evade the fact that I needed to, you know, kind of pick up the cell phone and call Donna and say, listen, honey, and I try that when I'm outside of myself. I'll apologize at some point, say, honey, I'm sorry, you know, I'm having a bad day. She goes, I must have been something because I ain't do nothing to you. And now the kids are kind of like, you know, and now I'm feeling that need to kind of want to run through the house and kind of apologize to everybody and try to get some harmony back, because I had already experienced what it was like to have peace for making right my wrongs. And that's the way I like to live, in peace. But I'm creating my own turmoil. Sober. I love this program. Greatest thing that ever happened to me. And I hope that I can... Sometimes, you know, you reach a point in this sharing stuff, right, where, I don't know about y'all, but like, you know, after exposing certain stuff, you start feeling stuff, you know, and what I'm feeling after saying what I just said to y'all is that I never feel like my work is undone. I never feel like all my work is done. I never feel like I'm complete, and I never feel like I'm incomplete. I just am. And when that moment comes where I know I just am, I go right back to that statement. As God's child, all I could do is stand here and be who I am. And to stand here in front of you and not let you know who I am when you gave me the opportunity to come and be honest with you and tell you who I am and the progress that's been made. Y'all heard both good and bad come from me. And I hope that there is some usefulness in it. You see what I'm saying? Seven-step prayer just keeps recycling itself as well. And I once heard a wise person in an AA meeting one time says, good or bad, I show you AA work. I have not drank or drugged or used any mind-altering chemicals since June 11th of 1994. Good or bad or indifferent, AA work. And if you want it to work, it'll work. But sometimes I even get to a point to where I'm thinking, how much more is there? No wonder he introduced me to an infinite God. Because if I'm going to continue to tap into that unlimited load, I got to keep digging. It's not always, you know, how many times y'all heard this, man? We sit in these meetings, we hear people talk about AA and this, that, and the other. And then they talk about 10, 11, and 12 being this, you know, rotating cycle. But I'm grateful that 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 is something you could just... Because if I didn't have that step back and then step back up, I wouldn't have no cool-off period. I'd be just like it says, and right after it said, God could and would if he was sought. I will be driven by self-propulsion in collision with anything that gets in my way. And then just like the man coming out the cellar, hey Donna, ain't it good that the wind stopped blowing? And then when I walk outside, all that wreckage and damage is there. And sometimes I could do that sober. So if you think your work is done, God bless you. And if you don't believe that I'm going to go to heaven when you get there, I dare you to watch the door. Because my loud black butter come walking in. And you'll probably say to yourself, can't get rid of him. That's how AA must feel sometimes. And I'm grateful that I had the opportunity to come and share with y'all. And like I say always when I get an opportunity to share, if I have said, done, behaved in a manner at this time I had at the podium, I asked your forgiveness. And the only reason I asked your forgiveness, if you have the power to judge, then you have the power to forgive. I had to learn that. I paid a price for quoting that in meetings. I had people come up to me and say, why you do that all the time? I said, why should I wait? I know I don't always say the right things. I know I don't always look the right way. I don't always think the right way or see everything the way you see it. So I want to let you know that if I offended you, I'm sorry. That's to each and every person in this room, including the doggy. And I'm just happy. I'm very excited. So God bless y'all. And like our founder says, you know, trudge along. If y'all don't see me next week, we'll see each other as we trudge. So may God bless you and keep you till the next time we get a chance to share. Thanks for letting me share.